Yes, I could have been a judge, but I never had the Latin. I just never had the Latin for the judging. I just never had it, so I'd had it as far as being a judge was concerned. I hadn't got enough of it to get through the rigorous judging exams. They're very rigorous, the judging exams. Very rigorous indeed. They're noted for their rigour. People come out of them saying, my God, what a rigorous exam. And so I become a miner instead. I managed to get through the mining exams. They're not very rigorous. There's no rigour involved, really. There's complete lack of rigour involved in the mining exams. They only ask you one question. They say, who are you? And I got 75% on that. I was allowed right down. Of course, it's quite interesting work, getting hold of lumps of coal all day. It's quite interesting. You're given complete freedom to do what you like, your absolute free hand to do anything you like, provided you get hold of 2 tons of coal every day. But the method you do it, you can use any method open to you. Hacking and hewing's a normal one. Some people prefer the hacking, others the hewing. Some people do the combination. I'm a combination man myself. I do the hack and hew, both. And then there's running at the coal face with your head. That's another. One of the worst methods, known as the bad method of getting hold of coal. Then there's scrabbling at it with your bare hands. It's the almost as bad method of getting hold of coal. And there's a myriad others, but hacking and hewing, as you say, it's quite a varied life you have down there. The trouble with it is the people. I'm not saying you get a load of riffraff down the mine, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying we had a load of riffraff down my mine. Very boring conversationalists. Extremely boring. All they talk about is what goes on in the mine. Extremely boring. If you're searching for a word to describe the conversations, what go on down the mine, boring would spring to your lips. It would spring to your lips. They go on and on with these. Oh, God, they're very boring. If ever you want to hear a boring conversation, just pop down the mine. There it will be. Things like, hello, I found a bit of coal. Have you really? Yes, no doubt about it. This black substance is coal, all right. Jolly good, the very thing we're looking for. Yes, and what's more, it's quite a heavy lump. Be very careful not to drop it on your foot then. Ha ha ha. What? Me drop a great heavy lump of coal on my foot? You must be out of your... Oh! I've dropped it on my foot, I see. Silly duffer. Yes. Hello, I found another lump of coal. Even heavier than the first lump. Be very careful not to drop that on your foot then. Ha ha ha. What? Me drop another great heavy lump of coal on my foot? You must be out of your... Oh! I've dropped it on your foot, I see. It's not enough to keep the mind alive, is it? I sought solace in the printed page, quite frankly, for I'm very interested in the world of literature. But the trouble is that all this knowledge I've got hold of is useless. Useless as regards the judging. They require the Latin for it. I wish I'd had it, because it's safer work judging than mining. You're not troubled by falling coal, for one thing. You don't get that down your Guildhalls. It's a feature of a Guildhall life, the absence of falling coal. You get judges remarking on it. They say, hello, not much coal falling in today. And And what's more, being a miner, as soon as you're too old and tired and ill and sick and stupid to do your job properly, you have to go. Well, the very opposite applies with the judges. So all in all, I'd rather have been a judge than a miner.
You're still working for Beaverbrook, are you?
Yes, I'm still working for the Beaver, if work's the right word. Look, don't get me wrong on this, Eleanor boy. I haven't changed. I mean, working for the paper hasn't altered my outlook in any way. You and I in the old days, you always used to think alike on most things, but it's just the same now. I mean, name any issue and I'll agree with you on it. You mustn't think just because my name's at the top of the column, you mustn't think that I'm in some way connected with it. Just that I wrote it and they printed it. You know, it's a very tenuous sort of connection in any case. I mean, I like Mountbatten. I think he does a wonderful job of work. If ever I have to write something on him, every now and then I'm absolutely forced to write something on him, I always ring him up afterwards and apologise. Or get my secretary to or something like that. My wife and I, you know my wife, do you?
Yes, I do.
Lovely little house now down in East Grinstead. Two little kids. You've got to fight for it, haven't you? Well, we go for holidays in Germany to make up. I say join the common market in private. You know, I'm quite rebellious around about midnight sometimes. I'm working on the novel, you know. One day that novel's going to come out and blast the lid off the whole filthy business. Name the name, show up Fleet Street for what it really is. A really accurate novel about all those people. Of course, if you're going to write a really accurate novel, you've got to join the people you're writing about. For a while, at any rate. I'm going through a sort of research period at the moment. About 10 of us on the paper, actually, sort of young, progressive, liberal people who don't believe a word we're writing. I'll tell you what we do. Whenever the old man holds a party, a cocktail party or something, we all gather down the far end of the room, you see, and drink as much as we possibly can. We really knock it back. We drink and drink and drink. We're trying to break him from within. And do you know what we do down there?
No,
do you know what we do? Quite openly, behind our hands, we snigger at him.
You snigger?
We snigger and titter at the Beaver. We go, ha ha ha, put on a bit of weight in Santa Fe, fat old Beaver. Snigger, snigger, titter, titter.
Well, I don't seem very much to me.
Oh, a titter here, a titter there, it all adds up. You'd be surprised.
You take me. I'm no saint, but I turned down $3,000 a year with an advertising agency because I didn't want to make that sort of money.
I think that's wonderful, Alan. I think that's really wonderful. In a way, I wish I could be like you. But we don't all come into 50,000 at the age of 21. So you want to know about the war? The '30s were coming to an end. Heavy with menace, the '40s were just around the corner.
I'm stepping up.
At the Victoria Palace, Lupino Lane was entrancing London with me and my girl. An escort, a year of royal victories. Walt Disney had done it again with Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
But underneath the gaiety, the storm clouds were gathering. Across Europe, German soldiers were dancing the hideous gavotte of war.
Then came a break in the clouds.
I have here, from Herr Hitler, a piece of paper.
Broke out. I was at a house party at Clifton, and after Mr. Chamberlain's moving words to the nation on that fateful September Sunday, I turned to my husband, as he then was, and said, Squiffy, this is the end of an era. But I did not feel then that all was quite lost, and immediately afterwards I got on the phone to Berlin to try to speak to Herr Hitler, been so kind to us on our last visit to Germany that summer. Unfortunately, the line was engaged, There was nothing I could do to avert the carnage of the next 6 years.
Mr. Charles Spedding of Hoxton remembers.
I'll always remember that day that war was declared. I was out in the garden at the time, planting out some croissants. It was a grand year for croissants, 1939. I wish we could have another one like it. My wife came out to me in the garden and told me the ghastly news about the outbreak of hostilities. Never mind, my dear, I said to her, you put on the kettle. We'll have a nice cup of tea.
Put out that light.
All over Britain, the humble little people showed the same spirit of courage.
You can always tell the difference between theirs and ours. Ours had a sort of steady, reliable British hum, rather like a homely old bumblebee. Theirs, on the other hand, had a sort of horrible, vicious, intermittent whine, like a ghastly foreign mosquito.
Meanwhile, England was blanketed in security.
Now, wait a moment. How shall we arrange this signpost, Sam? Let's put, Lyme Regis, where Ipswich was.
Right. Ipswich, where Great Yarmouth was.
And Great Yarmouth, where Lyme Regis was. I think that's the place, right?
That'll fool the boss, right?
Bye-bye, then. Bye-bye. Here. How do we get home?
Home. The very word had a sort of comforting sound, didn't it? Homes whose very foundations were built upon the air. Young men, scarcely boys, tossed aside youthful things and grew up overnight in that grimmer game which is war. A game where only one side was playing the game. Young men flocked to join the few.
Please, sir, I want to join the few.
I'm sorry, there are far too many.
From the rugby fields into the air.
From the squash courts into the clouds.
From the skiffs into the spitfires.
This was war.
I had a pretty quiet war in it. I was one of the few. We were stationed on at Biggin Hill. On Sunday, we got word Jerry was coming in. Over Hastings, I think it was. And I got up there as quickly as I could. And everything was very calm and peaceful. England lay like a green carpet below me. The war seemed worlds away. I could see Tunbridge Wells, the sun glinting on the river. I remembered that last weekend I'd spent there with Celia that summer. Suddenly, Jerry was coming at me out of a bank of cloud. I let him have it, and I think I must have got him in the wing because he spiraled past me out of control. As he did so, I'll always remember this, I caught a glimpse of his face. And you know, he smiled. Funny thing, war.
Oh, Lady Mary, Lady Saint, oh, Lady Swift. Oh, Lady Mary.
Let's have another pint. Come on, drink up,
Perkins. Perkins.
Sorry, sir.
Perkins. Sorry to drag you away from the fun, old boy.
That's all right, sir.
War's not going very well, you know.
Oh, my God.
We're two down and the ball's in the enemy court.
Yes, sir.
War's a psychological thing, Perkins, rather like a game of football.
Yes, sir.
You know how in a game of football, 10 men often play better than 11.
Yes, sir.
Perkins, we're asking you to be that one man.
Sir.
I want you to lay down your life, Perkins.
Right, sir.
We need a futile gesture at this stage. It'll raise the whole tone of the war.
Yes, sir.
Get up in a crate, Perkins.
Right, sir.
Pop over to Bremen.
Yes, sir.
Take a shift, eh?
Right, sir.
Don't come back.
Right, sir.
Goodbye, Perkins. God, I wish I was going to.
Goodbye, sir. Or perhaps it's au revoir.
No, Perkins.
But London, that grand old lady, nurtured her children well.
At the National Gallery, Dame Myra Hess wove her magic fingers inextricably into the heartstrings of London.
The music you're listening to, Timothy, is German music, and we're fighting the Germans. That's something you're going to have to work out later on.
Ah,
That was the night they got Pithy Street. I'll always remember it. I was out in the garden at the time. Planting out some deadly nightshade for the Boche. My wife came out to me in the garden and told me the abominable news. Thousands have died in Pithy Street, she said. Never you mind the thousands of dead, I said to her. You put on the kettle. We'll have a nice cup of tea.
Andrews?
Yes, sir?
How many children do you have?
I got six, sir. Hmm? How about you, sir?
Oh, well, you see, Mary and I only had 24 hours before I came out here. I've never even seen my son, Timothy. We've got him down for Eton, of course. And you know, he's got the makings of a damn fine scrum half, Mary tells me.
Is he really, sir? Yes. Oh, that's grand, isn't it?
It's rather nice. Look, Andrews.
Yes, sir?
I've not said this before, but we've been right through this beastly business together now. And you know, until this horrible war started, I'd never come across men of your social class before. But let me say just this. It's been a privilege.
God bless you, sir. God bless you.
All right. Let's go.
How grateful we were to the BBC in those dark days of the war, when every night at 9 o'clock, Alvar Liddell brought us news of fresh disasters.
This is Alvar Liddell bringing you news of fresh disasters.
I never ever used to hear the 9 o'clock news, as I was always out in the garden, round about nine-ish, planting out some carrots for the night fighters. But I do remember that black, black day that rationing was imposed. My wife came out to me in the garden, her face a mask of grief. Charlie, she said, rationing has been imposed and all that that entails. Never mind, my dear, I said to her, you put on the kettle. We'll have a nice cup of boiling hot water this evening.
The tide was turning. The wicket was drying out. It was deuce, advantage, Great Britain. Then America and Russia asked if they could join in. The whole thing turned into a free-for-all. And so, unavoidably came peace, putting an end to organized war as we'd come to know it.
Well, we've done our best. Now it's up to the youngsters.
I wonder what they'll make of it.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be
forgot? Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm terribly well, and you?
I'm terribly well as well.
God, I must say you're looking awfully fit.
Well, I'm feeling pretty fit, actually.
Yes.
Isn't it amazing us bumping into each other like this?
Yes, I mean, here of all places.
Here of all places. I mean, I haven't seen you since...
Oh, God, hold on a second.
When was it?
God, we haven't seen each other...
Oh, God.
Well, we haven't seen each other... before.
That's right, we've never ever seen each other before, have we?
Yeah.
You've never seen me.
And I've never seen you. What a small world.
What a small world.
God, it's the last thing I expected.
Well, it must be about a million to one chance.
Oh, more than that.
Do you think so?
Yes, a couple of billion to one.
A couple of billion and a half, possibly.
Yes, probably 3 billion to one, the way the world's going.
Yes, they're breeding like rabbits, aren't they?
Yes. Anyway, it's awfully nice to see you.
Well, it's terribly nice to see you.
Yes. tell me, are you still doing whatever you have been doing? That is, of course, if you ever do anything.
Oh, yes, I'm still with the old firm, you know.
The old firm?
Yes, soldiering on. Just been made a director, in fact.
Oh, congratulations.
Well, under somewhat tragic circumstances, I stepped into poor old Bender's shoes. Did you know Bender?
Bender. The name certainly doesn't ring a bell. Bender who?
Bender Harrison.
Oh, Bender Harrison, yeah. No, I've never heard of him.
You never will now, poor chap. He died last week.
God, so poor old Bender's dead.
Completely dead.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I had no idea.
Well, nor did Bender, really. He sort of keeled over at the office party.
Oh, God.
Mind you, knowing Bender the way I knew Bender, which was pretty well.
Yeah.
I think that's the way he would have wanted to go.
Well, you knowing Bender the way you must have known Bender, I'm sure that's the way he must have wanted to go.
Yes.
Not much point lingering on.
No, he was 106.
Oh.
I tell you the one thing I really ought to know, and that's how's your, if you have a... do you?
My wife, Vera. Is that who you...
Yes, how is she?
She's awfully well.
I'm so pleased about that.
Yes, terribly well, Vera. And, of course, young Martin's going to school now.
Martin going to school?
Yes.
Good God, I had no idea how time flies.
I know, it's amazing. One moment they're that high, the next moment they're that high.
Yeah. Good Lord.
And tell me, how's,
hold on. Roger Braintree.
Yes, how's Roger Braintree?
Got absolutely no idea. I've never met him. I just saw his name in the telephone book, and I must say, I was very much hoping you might be able to sort of fill me in on what Roger's up to.
Well, I'm afraid I can't help out there.
You've no idea what Roger might be doing?
Well, not apart from what you've told me.
About him being in the telephone book, yeah.
Yeah. Mind you, of course, that's bloody good news.
Well, I'm terribly pleased for Roger.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose Braintree, he's under B.
He's right under B, yes, which is a pretty bloody good place to start.
Oh, yeah. Yes. What,
B-R-A-I-N-T-R-E-E.
The whole thing.
He's got his whole thing in there,
Marvellous. I'm so pleased for Roger.
Yes, I'm just sorry you know so little about what he's doing in other directions.
Yes, I'm sorry I can't really help out there.
Not really your fault.
Well, no.
Is it?
No, it's just that I feel a bit of a fool not being able to, fill you in on what he's up to.
Yeah.
Perhaps I'll give him a ring this evening, see what he's doing.
Good idea. Hmm. Anyway, look, terribly nice to see you. I really ought to be dashing back to the office, you know, time waits for no man.
Yes, ought to be toddling along myself.
And do remember me to,
Vera.
You must forgive me, I'm terribly bad at names, keep forgetting them.
That's quite all right.
Do remember me to,
Vera.
That's the chap.
Yes.
And jolly good luck with it.
Yes, well, and the same to you. And look, we must keep in touch.
Absolutely. Look, I'll give you a tinkle.
Or vice versa.
Yes, we must do this again.
Yes.
Goodbye.
Come in.
You sent for me, sir?
Yes, I did, Rawlings. Rawlings, I have a rather distressing piece of news this morning. As you know, several generations of your family have brought credit and distinction to the school.
Yes, sir.
Your father, your grandfather, and your great-grandfather before you have each been head boy of this school.
Yes, sir.
You, in your turn, are in line for this privilege when Whitwell leaves the school next year to go up to Oxford to study forestry. However, Rawlings, I was rather disappointed to hear from Mr. Esprey, the physical training master, that a pair of very valuable gymnasium slippers disappeared from his stockroom Tuesday last and reappeared, Rawlings, as if by magic, in your locker, next to a copy of Saucy Girls Around the World.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Well, I'll own it. Do you have any explanation for the appearance of these gym shoes in your locker, apart from the one that immediately springs to mind?
No, sir. I wanted the gym shoes and I took them.
You wanted the gym shoes, Rawlings, and you took them?
Yes, sir.
Good thinking. Rawlings, do you have any conception of what would happen in this world if everybody just took what they wanted?
It would be ghastly, sir.
It would be ghastly. Thank you, Rawlings. It would be ghastly. We would be living in a sea of anarchy. The whole model fibre of society would fall apart. Do you feel you're in some way unique, Rawlings, and exempt from the basic laws of human behaviour?
No, sir.
Do you feel that the ethics of a civilised society apply to everyone except you?
No, sir.
Are you indeed some latter-day Hitler, Rawlings, who feels he can annex whatever he wants Today, Jim Shoes. Tomorrow, the world.
No, sir.
No, sir. Well, now, Rawlings, let me explain something to you. It is my duty to douse the flames of such overweening ambition, to exorcise this creeping cancer. And, Rawlings, you will find in me no policy of appeasement, boy. No. Rather, you will find in me a Churchill. I will fight you on the beaches, Rawlings. I will fight you in the air. I will repel your doodle bugs. And I will snatch your Messerschmitts from the sky. Got it?
Yes, sir.
Good. Well, now, Rawlings, you may have gathered there is only one course open to me. I'm going to have to give you a damn good thrashing. I want you to bend over and take six of the best.
Well, sir, could I just say one thing, sir?
Well, yes, you may, Rawlings, but any plea for mercy is going to fall on deaf ears.
Well, sir, I did steal the gym shoes, sir, and I do deserve to be punished.
Yes, Rawlings.
And you're much older and wiser than I am, sir.
Oh, come on, boy.
But I'm much bigger than you are, sir. And if you lay a finger on me, I'll smash your stupid little face in.
Rawlings, why didn't you tell me all of this before? Completely different complexion on the whole affair. Rawlings, I want you to accept on behalf of the school my private collection of Screw magazine.
Thank you, sir.
This excellent deck of Acapulco gold, which I scored this morning.
Thank you, sir.
Take this £10 off. Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm talking tonight to Sir Arthur Greaves Striebling.
Oh, no, you're not.
I'm what?
You're not at all. You're talking to Sir Arthur Strieb Greebling.
Oh,
you're confusing me with Sir Arthur Greaves Striebling.
I'm so sorry.
Yes, well, my name is Strieb Greebling. The T is silent, as in fox.
I'm so sorry. I would like to ask Sir Arthur something about his rather unique restaurant, the Frog and Peach.
Well, this seems like an ideal opportunity, really. What with me being here and you being there.
Well, yes, yes.
Wonderful opportunity.
Yes, indeed.
Seize it.
Certainly will. Well, perhaps you would tell us something about the Frog and Peach, Sir Arthur.
Yes.
How, in fact, did the idea come to you?
The idea for the Frog and Peach came to me in the bath. A lot of things come to me in the bath. Many mosquitoes, various forms of water snake. But on this occasion, a rather unique, and stunning idea. I suddenly thought to myself, where can a young couple with not too much money to spend, you know, feeling a bit hungry, a bit peckish, want something to eat, where can they go and get a really big frog? A really big frog and a damn fine peach. Where can they go?
Yes.
Where can they go? Of course, answer came there none. So on this premise, I founded the restaurant.
On these premises, in fact?
On these precise premises, yes. I founded the Frog and Peach.
How long ago did you start this venture?
Oh, that's a tricky one. Certainly within living memory.
Good.
Believe it or shortly after World War II.
Ah, yes.
You remember that, World War II?
Well, certainly, yes.
Absolutely ghastly business.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely ghastly business.
Yes, indeed, yes.
I was completely against it.
Well, I think we all were.
Yes, well, I wrote a letter.
Getting back to the Frog and Peach.
Yes.
How has business been?
Let me answer that question in two parts. Business hasn't been, and there hasn't been any business. These last 35 years have been rather a lean time for us, up at the old F&P.
Well, don't you feel you're at a slight disadvantage being stuck out here in the middle of a bog and in the heart of the Yorkshire Moors?
I think the word disadvantage is awfully well chosen here, yes. This is what we're at. We're at a disadvantage. Mm. Stuck out here in the middle of a bog in the heart of the Yorkshire Moors. Well, I thought at the time, rightly or wrongly, possibly both. The people in this country were crying out for a restaurant without a parking problem. And here, in the middle of a bog, in the heart of the Yorkshire Moors, there is no problem parking the car.
No.
A little difficulty extricating it, but The parking here is magnificent.
Yes.
It is magnificent parking.
Yes, indeed.
Wonderful parking.
But don't you feel you're also at a disadvantage with regard to your menu?
Oh, yes. Yes, we are at a tremendous disadvantage with regard to the menu.
Mm.
Have you seen it?
Very briefly.
That's the only way to see it. I mean, the choice is so limited. We have such a limited choice. There's only two main dishes to choose from. Now, what are they? Last, I should know this by heart after 35 years. Oh, yes, first of all, there is frog à la pêche. Frog à la pêche is basically a large frog covered in boiling Cointreau with a peach stuck in its mouth. It's one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen. The only alternative to frog à la pêche is even worse. Pêche à la frog. Pêche à la frog. A peach is brought to your table by the waiter. Again, covered in boiling Cointreau.
The waiter?
Very often, yes. Very often the waiter is, alas, covered in boiling Cointreau. But the policy here is to aim the Cointreau at the peach.
Yes.
That's the policy.
Yes.
The peach is then sliced open down the middle to reveal, oh my God, about 300 squiggling black tadpoles. It is the most nauseating sight I have ever seen. It's enough to put you off your food.
Yes.
Which is a damn good thing, considering what the food is like.
Yes. Who does the cooking?
My wife. My wife does all the cooking, and luckily she does all the eating as well. She's not a well woman.
She's not a well woman?
She is not a well woman, no. And she very much resents having to go down the well every morning. to feed the frogs. She dislikes it intensely. We have to lower her, screaming on a rope. Holy Christ, she goes. Frogs don't like it either.
No.
Dreadful.
Well, this is fascinating stuff. But if you don't mind me saying, sir, it does seem to me as if the whole venture of the frog and peach has been a little disastrous.
Oh. I don't think I'd use the word disastrous, yeah?
No?
I think catastrophic will be nearer the mark. The whole thing has been a total failure and a huge catastrophe.
But do you feel you've learned from your mistakes?
Oh, certainly. Certainly. I have learned from my mistakes, and I'm sure I could repeat them exactly.
Thank you, Sir Arthur Green Street.
Speak to you, Mr. Where's my seat?
One of the most bizarre cases in the files of Scotland Yard is that of the mystery minicab driver. Our story begins one late November evening in Hampstead.
Your minicab, sir. Lord Nesbitt?
Yes. Listen, you're late. My car's broken down. I've got to make a speech in the House of Lords in a half an hour.
Right, sir. Do you like to sit in the front or make yourself comfortable on the back?
Well, I'll sit in the back, thank you. I have a few papers I want to go through.
All right, sir. I see yours is about 7 inches long.
I beg your pardon?
Your entry in Who's Who is about 7 inches long. Do you see, Nesbitt all the way down the page there.
Oh, I see. You've been checking up on me, have you?
Well, I like to keep my tabs on who I've got in the back of the car, you know, sir.
What an extraordinary hobby.
Oh, it keeps the mind occupied.
I suppose it does. That's very good.
Four five.
Yes, 4-5.
P.O.B. Hampstead, preceding House of Lords.
Listen, I've got to make a speech in a half an hour, so I'll be obliged if you put your foot down.
All right, sir, this time of night, might I suggest we take a few back doubles at the bloody murder on the West End?
Yes, well, whatever you think is quickest.
Apple 5. Have you picked up
How did you get her number, sir?
I think one of your chaps popped a card in through the letterbox. My wife gave it to me.
Oh, yeah, we get a lot of customers that way through the letterbox.
Yes, I'm sure you do.
I said we get a lot of customers that way.
Did I say something funny?
Not really, sir. Just have to laugh to stay alive in this miserable job. I wonder if you could try something, sir. A little party game which might amuse you. Knock, knock.
What?
It's a little game, sir. I say knock, knock, and you say, who's there?
I say what?
You say, who's there, when I've said knock, knock.
Who's there?
That's right, sir. Could we try it? I think it might amuse you.
Well, yes, by all means.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Sam and Janet.
Ah, yes, that's very good.
No, sir, it's no bloody good at all. You see, when I say Sam and Janet, you're supposed to say, Sam and Janet who? And I come back with a killer line. Now, can we try again from the top, sir? It's knock, knock, who's there? Sam and Janet who from you? Then it's my wee line, sir.
Yes, right.
I think the end result will tickle you.
It undoubtedly will, yes.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Sam and Janet.
Sam and Janet who?
Sam and Janet evening. Sam and Janet evening.
What do I say now?
You don't say anything now, sir. That's it. That's the wee joke.
Oh, well, that's hilarious.
Must be quite nice, sir, being in the House of Lords. Make a speech every now and then, get reported in the press, get invited on television. It must be very nice to be famous.
Yes. Well, I'm not famous, you know.
Oh, but you're well known, aren't you, sir?
Yes, all right, I'm well known, I'll grant you that.
It's all a matter of luck, really, isn't it? Where you're born, who your parents are.
Hmm.
I was found in a dustbin in Glasgow. I never knew my parents.
I'm very sorry.
First call, blind beggar, pub, Whitechapel.
4-5.
Second call, blind beggar, pub, Whitechapel.
4-5.
Assistance, blind beggar, pub.
4-5 here.
Roger, 4-5.
Dropping Westminster in about 10 minutes. Could be in Whitechapel in 20.
Roger, 4-5. Pick up torso and drop on Wimbledon Common.
Is that cash or charge?
Cash. The money's in a brown paper envelope.
Roger, Budge.
Excuse me, did I or did I not hear that chap say torso?
That's right, sir, torso. Old Tony Torso is one of our regulars.
Oh, good God, what a bloody stupid name.
Oh, no, you'd be surprised at the number of torsos floating around these days. Tony runs a very successful little Italian restaurant, the A6.
Apple 5.
My God, that's quite extraordinary. Look, would you turn that thing off? I find it rather distracting.
Well, the radio phone?
Yes.
By all means, sir, I've got the torso job to do, so I'm laughing. You mind if I put on a cassette, sir?
Look, whatever you like.
Little music to while away the time as you drive through the fog. It's an interesting piece, sir. It's written by a Russian. Tragic life. He committed suicide at the age of 30 for personal reasons. The critics never appreciated his work during his lifetime. This music sort of reflects the despair and misery of his life. I identify with it very strongly. It sort of conjures up a mood for me.
It's bloody gloomy.
Well, life can be gloomy, can't it, sir?
Good God, man. What are you doing with a gun in the glove compartment?
What am I doing with the gun, sir? Nothing at the moment. Just that these days you never know who you might get in the back. That's rather good, actually, isn't it? You never know who you might get in the back. Do you get it, sir?
No, I don't get it.
Oh, you'll get it in time. You'll get it in time. It'll come to you in a sudden blinding flash. Jesus, hit.
God's sake, man, look, where are you going?
Bloody nun shouldn't be allowed on the road. Talking of guns, sir, which we were, didn't I read somewhere that you're on that commission investigating the rise of violent crime?
Yes, I am. Why?
What do you put it down to, sir? What is it in society that produces a Lee Harvey Oswald, a Sirhan Sirhan, or that Bremer bloke who tried to gun down Wallace?
Well, I think all of these chaps had one thing in common.
Aye.
They were all loners.
Loners. I mean, take me, for example. I've got no family. Women have always laughed at me. I've drifted from job to job. You could call me a loner if you like.
Oh, you're not a loner? Not in this sort of job? My God, man, you must meet lots of interesting people. Take me, for example.
Bullshit.
I'm not saying I'm typical.
I don't like people.
Well, there's no obligation.
People don't like me.
Of course they like you. You're a very likeable chap. I mean, you've got a marvellous sense of humour. I love that joke of yours. Sam and Janet, who? That was terrific.
You're just saying that, sir.
I'm not just saying that.
You don't really like me?
Of course I like you. I mean, I know this is terribly sudden. I'm absolutely enchanted by you.
Don't touch me, sir. You know my theory why people go around assassinating famous people, sir?
I'd be very interested to hear.
It's the only chance in life of getting some kind of recognition.
My God, man, I think violence will get us absolutely nowhere.
Oh, do you think not, sir? Or what about Lee Harvey Oswald? He was a nobody, an entity. Nobody had ever heard of him. Then suddenly, boom, boom!
Who's there? Oh.
Lee Harvey Oswald was a household word.
Oh, that's very funny. I like that one.
I mean, what chance have I got of going down in history? You won't find many minicab drivers with that obituary in the Times.
Listen, I have contacts on the Times. There'll be a letter in the mail tomorrow.
But Lee Harvey Oswald. Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, there's a name to be reckoned with. All right, sir. You can get out.
Well, for God's sake, man, be reasonable.
I've got a job to do, sir.
For God's sake, don't do anything rash.
This is it, sir.
No, listen! God's sake, listen. Look, look. I'm a rich man. Look, take my money. For God's sake, anything.
Just